Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
On the latest Blackhawks Talk podcast, Adam Burrish and the newest member of our NBC Sports Chicago Blackhawks content team, Scott King, joins me to break down the Blackhawks' struggles, just 3 wins in their last dozen games. What can be done to a defensive core that is without Duncan Keith and Calvin DeHaan? Plus, the latest on Kirby Dach. Should he go play for Team Canada in the World Juniors coming up in late December? And in honor of his 2,500 regular season games as Blackhawks head trainer, Mike Gapsky sits down with Pat Foley to discuss his last 33 years with the Blackhawks.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness, and packaged cold for peak refreshment, because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Well, we welcome Scott, his maiden voyage to the Blackhawks Talk podcast. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I wish it was under better circumstances here. Hawks falling for the third straight time, just 3 wins in their last 12. And Adam, kind of the story Thursday night in Arizona's one that was eerily similar to what we saw in Vegas. 3 first period goals by Vegas on Tuesday night, 3 first period goals from the Coyotes, and this one was in catch-up mode from the get-go.
Yeah, real similar, and we talked about it in the Vegas game, and in Phoenix is Arizona. Excuse me, I keep screwing that up all the time. It's Arizona Coyotes, not Phoenix Coyotes, right? When you play run-and-gun teams that are fast offensively, transition really well, and they're not afraid to play a 6-4 game, a 5-4 game, once you fall behind 2 goals to a team like that, you have to start gambling and taking chances, and it's really, really hard to come back on a really good offensive team like that because they counter just as good as you are trying to counter. You open yourself up a lot, and for me, this is a Blackhawks team that isn't really built to run and gun. When you've got young defensemen that don't understand when to gamble, when they can, when they can't, Jonathan Toews sort of mentioned that, Robin Lehner mentioned that after the game, that you've got to kind of feel the game, you've got to understand how it's going, and that's what they're talking about. You got to know when to gamble, but against teams that can really high-fly, run and gun, tough to do for this Hawks team right now.
And obviously, the defense right now, without Duncan Keith, without Calvin DeHaan, they're young, they're inexperienced, there's not a lot of depth. But we saw, case in point, in Arizona on Thursday, you know, getting in behind Boqvist for a breakaway, and Grabner early on getting a glorious opportunity in behind the defense. These are just breakdowns that, you know, this team cannot afford to have.
They are. Look, and, you know, I thought this game here on Thursday was – there were more positives than the game in Vegas. I mean, you lose Calvin DeHaan, you kind of get the wind knocked out of your sails. Here, I think, specifically looking at the defense, you can draw positives for Murphy and Mata – were the guys who were logging the big minutes, and the only defenseman that didn't take a minus. Those guys did pretty well. Mata even got 3 shots on net in his return after not playing in the previous 4 games. So they're going to have to lean on those guys a lot. Yes, younger defensemen like Boqvist, and it was Gustafsson who got beat there for that first goal of the game by Grabner, a very fast skater, like Burrish was saying. A lot of fast guys on that team that the Hawks have had trouble with guys that can skate and teams that move the puck like that. So they just have to, you know, fix the gaps in the defense if they can, because, you know, we'll probably talk about scoring later, but you are getting some of your top guys on the score sheet now, and they've had great goaltending all season too.
And you look at the quality of chances, you know, just in the first period alone, Arizona had 28 shot attempts. They had 17 shots on goal. They had 11 scoring chances, and they had 6 high danger chances. I mean, you know, some of those numbers are ones you'd like to see for 60 minutes. certainly not for 20.
Yeah, that's the biggest difference between the Las Vegas game and the game against Arizona was in the Vegas game, there was chances back and forth. Jeremy had said after that game, I didn't really mind the first period. And it was run and gun, but the Hawks hung in there with it for a period. The period ends up 0-0, so you're okay. No harm done right there, where tonight you take a penalty 10 seconds in. I think there was three or four penalties in that first period, and we talked about it in our between intermissions there, PB, in the Arizona game, and I kind of talked about it quickly, but when you have a lot of penalties to start a game, it's really hard to get into because you got a lot of guys that don't play special teams or play penalty kill, but they don't play power play. And you start off a game and you're 10 seconds in, one line starts, you take a penalty. Now Kane is off the ice for 2.5 or 3 minutes, so he doesn't get any rhythm to the game. Goaltenders now, they don't get any rhythm to the game. It's really hard. You don't get into a game and, you know, people listening or watching are like, well, come on, just get ready. Just get out there and go. Well, you haven't done anything athletic in real time, 20 or 30 minutes. You've just been sitting there on the bench watching a hockey game go on. It's hard. So that was not the start they wanted. And Robin Lehner said that in his interview, too. He's like, this is really hard to play a game where you're giving up power plays and odd man rushes to start a game. And that was really the difference in the game.
Yeah, and good catch by you. Obviously, in that Vegas game, they did not allow a goal in the first period. It was three straight in the second. Scotty, as you take a look at it now, if we look at a positive, I guess it would be five consecutive games with a power play goal. And, you know, like we saw in Vegas, you know, the first three power plays weren't good. No shots on goal. They get one late. So I don't want to make too much like this thing is absolutely rolling. It seems like they're getting one or two good power plays out of the three or four opportunities they get on a given night.
Yeah, I mentioned the top scorers or the guys you want to be your top scorers earlier, and they're getting in on the power play. It's guys like Kubalik getting shots off, and Strom, who just came back recently from concussion protocol, worked really hard for his goal there, kind of diving in front of the net, in front of the crease, batting it around the goalie's skate there. So you have your top guys contributing on the power play, and that's going to play into five-on-five hockey. They're going to get a lot more confidence there.
Would you say, let me ask you this question. Would you say that if there's one spot this power play could get better, so you would need to see some improvement? And I don't mean to call, this isn't calling a guy out, but Gustafson, for me, I just need a little more on the point from him right there. He's the guy that's kind of the quarterback. Last year, he got this thing going. For the last couple of weeks, I don't see him getting a lot of shots through. In the Vegas game, like you said, PB, no shots. One guy that should always be ready to shoot and locked and loaded is that guy at the point. And for me, I just haven't seen a lot of urgency from him right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think he needs more confidence. You always want your quarterback on the power play to shoot a little more. And he's a guy who's got a great shot.
Great
you
shot.
Saw that a lot last year, yeah. I thought. So he can definitely be a little more greedy.
And we saw, too, in the Vegas game, DeBrincat trying to get it back to him. And the Golden Knights kind of sniffing that out, creating a turnover. And they're off and end up with a shorthanded opportunity and a shorthanded goal. As you look at the problems scoring five on five, and we look at the lines as they currently sit, it's been Kubalik, Taves, and Saad. I didn't mind them in the Arizona game. Obviously, they came up with the 1 5-on-5 goal there. DeBrincat, Strome, and Kane were, you know, they were quiet 5-on-5. Don't you think?
Yeah, they were. I didn't see, probably in the last two games, I didn't see a lot from that line. And at times, I know those guys love playing together. I know they've been wanting to play together, and they've played great together the last couple. Maybe in that Vegas game, you could say maybe that's a time you just kind of switch them up and see if that happens. Maybe tonight you throw a different combo and just break them up for a period. And then tomorrow you go back to practice, you can put them back together. But that would just be a tool that Jeremy may use at some point, where I'm just going to break you guys up. I'm going to slide. Maybe you don't put Kubalik there. Maybe I'm going to put Doc in the middle with those two guys and just get a little different momentum. It's an option.
Yeah, I like those three guys together. I mean, DeBrincat's feeling it now. He's got three goals and an assist in his last four games. That Thursday was finally a game where I actually watched him get a shot off from that left circle where that's his office, where he scores a ton of goals. And I just feel like he's been unlucky as much as anything. You watch that puck bounce over a stick so many times this year. So at least, you know, he's getting shots off. He's hot right now. I agree with Adam. Maybe you change it up. Was talking to someone earlier today that, yeah, why not get Kirby Doc in there, like you said, and get him some confidence in these young guys that are playing hard, get them some key minutes, and sometimes with key players.
Well, Scott, you bring up Kirby Doc, and right now the Blackhawks have a dilemma. Do they continue to let the 18-year-old, you know, play with the big club here in Chicago? Or, as we heard Bob McKenzie report on Thursday before the Hawks in Arizona went at it, that the Hawks are going to make a decision in the next 24 to 48 hours whether they're going to send Doc to the World Juniors, which takes place December 26th through January 5th in Vancouver and Victoria, British Columbia. I guess the first thing I would say to you is this, Adam. What benefit do you think you get for Kirby going to play with other 18-year-olds in that tournament that is going to benefit you long-term?
Yeah, well, I guess I should preface it by my answer by saying I never played in it. I was never good enough to play in it. I have no idea what that experience is like playing in that tournament. Guys that have played in it say it's one of the coolest experiences you can have in hockey.
One of the greatest tournaments in all sports. Yep. And certainly in hockey.
Sharp was just with us, and he said people watch that more than they do an NHL hockey game. I mean, this is, you sit around at Christmas in Canada and you watch the World Championships. So, but my opinion is that I don't think there's any reason for him to go. You can say, oh, he's going to go over there and he's going to play a lot and he's going to get better. Well, you know where you're going to get better in confidence is playing in NHL hockey games against men, not 18-year-olds. That's what I think. The other side of it is you talk about what if he goes over there and gets hurt. Well, you can get hurt, walking down the street too. So I'm not as concerned about that. I just think if you want him to get better and to get more confidence, play him 13 or 14 minutes. Start giving him more responsibility. I think he's earned it. I think he showed he can play. This is where playing for the Blackhawks for me is where I think he's going to get more confidence and where he's going to be able to grow as a player.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, develop him in the NHL, get him big minutes with guys that will help his game. It's always good to get that exposure if you play in a tournament and to be on a big stage. You know, he obviously hasn't played in the playoffs or anything like that, being a rookie. But I think, and look, they honestly just might need him. Things are so tough right now. I don't know.
That's a great point.
You have Sakura up right now. I don't know who else they're going to go down to. I haven't been paying too close attention to Rockford yet, but you have Highmore and Sakura, so I don't know who else they would go down and get that would be as big a difference maker as him right now.
Well, Andy, you can say too, this is such a great experience. Obviously, in Canada, it's the biggest thing. Ask every single guy on that Team Canada roster, would you rather play in a World Junior game, or would you rather tomorrow get called up and play in the NHL and play an entire season in the National Hockey League? I know if I was 18 years old, I didn't play for Team Canada, but my answer would be, are you kidding me? Can I go play in an NHL game tomorrow? That's a bigger deal to me than playing in a World Junior tournament.
And let's be honest, it's not like Doc has not, experienced some success so far. I mean, he does have 5 goals. It's not like he's searching for goal number one and he's gripping that stick so tight. The question I would say is, okay, if you do send him, who's coming up to play center from Rockford? And, you've got Tyler Sakura, Dylan's brother. You got Kurashev. You got Jacob Nielsen. Not exactly a ton of depth in the pipeline to take his spot. So I'm kind of with you. I also look at, like, last year with Henry Jokiharju. Now, again, this is not apples to apples.
Yep.
But I don't think Henry's experience in the World Juniors translated to a positive second half in the NHL. In fact, he spent most of it in Rockford when he came back, right?
Yeah. It just seems like there's a little bit of untapped potential in Doc. Like you said, he's got 5 goals. That's kind of earlier in the season. I feel like there's a lot of talent there, and you get more NHL experience. You can see it more and more, hopefully, by the end of the season.
Yeah, and that World Juniors people turn that game on, and these 18-year-olds are like missiles out there. They are flying around 100 miles an hour. They don't miss a check. It's a different game. And it may be at times a more entertaining game to watch because you've got all these young kids just ripping around out there. But for me, the chance of injury goes up when you're playing a style like that. And I just don't think it translates really, really well. I think he's getting a lot of confidence every time he's on the ice playing here, more so than going playing in a tournament where the game is, it's a lot different than it is in the NHL.
Before we send things over to Pat Foley, who's sitting down with a special guest in this podcast, the topic is Mike Gapski and his 2,500 regular season games where he's been the Blackhawks head trainer. That's 33 years that the Chicago native has worked in the city that, he grew up watching the Blackhawks. He's now been, the lifeblood in many ways in that locker room. As a former Blackhawk, can you explain to those listening to the podcast, A, just how much a trainer means in hockey and how much he keeps you together. And the fact that this guy has held this job for over three decades, what that says about him.
Yeah, I know Foley will ask him it and people get a chance to listen. But one of the questions I really like is about what does your day look like? Like how many hours are you putting in? And you can't even answer it. I can't even tell you how much time those guys spent at the rink. It's insane. You get to a city and you get off a plane at 1 a.m. As players, I grab my bag, I get on the bus, I go to the hotel, my hotel key's sitting on the desk, I go into my room and I go to bed. I show up at the rink the next day, and it looks like a mini United Center dressing room. Everything's hung perfectly. I can go in, I've got the tape ready to tape my hands, to tape my wrists. Gapper's there with a smile on his face. He's got treatment ready. He's got, you know, everything is just set up. And I just need to go sit on the training table, get the treatment that I need. I go get ready. I practice and I leave. I come back for the game. Everything's set perfectly again. We fly back to Chicago. We get to the rink the next day. All my equipment's hung. I show up again in the morning and I'm getting my treatment. And who does all this? Like, I didn't do it. I know Sharp didn't do it. I know nobody else did. It's the trainers that are going and doing that. And you get back at 1 a.m. in Chicago, and he goes to the rink for 2 hours. He probably gets home at 3 o'clock at night some days. Players show up at 9. Trainers are there at 7. I mean, the job they do and the hours they put in during a season, it's an 8-day-a-week job for 30 hours a day. It's insane what he does. And just a personal story with me for him is I tore my ACL in 2009, and Gapper and his partner, JT, was also a big help too, but I was a pain in their butt. And I think a lot of when you're going through injuries, professional athletes, you are, because you don't feel perfect and you know how your body should feel. And when you're coming back from injury, you don't feel good. And a lot of times you take it out on the trainer because why aren't I feeling better? Why aren't I doing this? I want to push it. And Gapper's like, slow down, Adam. You got to walk before you can run. And he would kind of talk you down. He has a real calming presence. And I think to do this 33 years, to deal with a bunch of egomaniac athletes, you have to have a calm presence. And Gapper has one of the best presence. And I remember, I think I wrote him a letter one day or a note because I was like, man, I feel bad that I've been riding these guys for 6 months. They've got to deal with me. And I wrote him a little thank you note, just thanks for putting up with me and these last 4 months of dealing with my ACL surgery. So he was certainly a one of a kind, a real calming presence in the locker room.
All right, Adam, good stuff on Gapski. Scotty, thank you for joining us on your maiden voyage of the Blackhawks Talk podcast. Now let's send it over to Pat Foley, who's sitting down with Mike Gapski.
Our very special guest tonight is a guy who reaches a career milestone, 2,500 games as a medical trainer for Mike Gapski. There's only one medical man in the history of the league that's had a longer career in one place than Gapper has. St. Rita product, UIC product, 2,500 in. Take me back to your first game. What do you remember about your first game as a trainer for the Blackhawks?
The funny story was we were at the game, and my wife and family, they all come out to cheer me on, and or just be there for the game. And then we had a player get hurt during that game, and I go run out on the ice and take care of the guy. They were all in the crowd, and they're cheering. And it's like the fans. I mean, Blackhawk fans are pretty, you know, they're hardcore Blackhawk fans. Next thing you know, they start getting pelted with pennies and cans and pops and stuff like that. It was kind of funny. And so that was kind of it, funny first game.
You had to let them know, when I go on the ice, don't cheer for me.
That's not about me. Yeah, those are players. Yeah, you can't do that.
I want to give you a chance to talk about your parents and how they shaped the man you've become and the career that you've had.
We grew up on the South Side, of course, went to St. Rita Grammar School and High School and the UIC College. My parents were there all the time, and my family was like a huge Blackhawk fans. I mean, growing up, every Saturday night was my mom would make a huge bowl of popcorn, and we'd sit in front of the TV watching the Channel 9 and the Blackhawk games, and I've been a Blackhawk fan my entire life. Never did I think I'd be, you know, where I am now. My mom used to tell me when he was Skip, we'd watch Skip all the time. Because I didn't start out as an athletic trainer. I was kind of went a different course in college. I didn't switch till my third year. But then once I took an athletic training course, I loved it, and here I am today. But you know, she'd always tell me, "Why don't you call the trainer from the Blackhawks?" I'm not interested in that. I love what I'm doing at UIC. I was teaching. I was a head trainer there and co-head trainer there, and I enjoyed the college life. You know, with teaching and training. And never had ambitions, but if I did have ambition to go someplace, the Blackhawks would have been the only team I wanted to go to. Because I like all the other sports, but the Blackhawks, I mean, we were just a true diehard Blackhawk family. So it's worked out great.
I love it. To have a job like this, a work ethic is huge. A lot of people watching this tonight will have what you might call a typical job. They might have a 40-hour work week. What's a work week for Mike Gatzke during the season? How many hours is that?
Well, I mean, during the season, I mean, we can start at 8 o'clock in the morning and end up at 2 o'clock in the morning. So on days where we're traveling and things like that, some days practice days are nice. They get a little lighter. It may be a 6 or 7 hour day. So a lot of lost family time, but we get to make some of it up in the summertime, and it's nice to do that.
I remember hearing a story about Mrs. Gatzke, R.I.P. And the Blackhawks, the first couple father's trips that they had, they were thinking about getting the mothers involved. And as that decision was being made, Mrs. Gatzke has a conversation with John McDonough, maybe at the Christmas party or something. And she says, hey, what about the moms? You know, we had to drive these kids around, too.
Yeah. She was more excited than I was. I mean, I was like, she was getting up in age. I was kind of wondering if she'd be able to get through that. And when I asked her if she wanted to go, it was like, I mean, that was all she needed to do that. And she enjoyed it so much. I'm glad she was able to make the one she did.
And the Hawks were going to do that anyway. They knew it was the right thing to do, but I love that Mrs. Gapper stepped in and said, hey.
She was such a fan. I mean, she'd make me get the Christmas cards, Blackhawks send Christmas cards every year.
Yeah.
Every year. She'd make me go around to different, like, I had to give her 100 Christmas cards. She sent Blackhawk Christmas cards to everyone for as long as I had this job and she worked for us. I had to give her the 100 Blackhawk Christmas cards so she can send them to all her friends and family.
Okay, you've been doing this a long time. It's your 33rd year. Are the players much different today than they were when you started, other than the fact that we keep getting older and they keep getting younger?
No, I think they're still the same. I mean, the game has gotten a little faster. I mean, a lot faster, it's obvious. But, no, the players are still the same. I enjoy them all. You know, we have a good time. I like I said, I wouldn't be sitting here now if I didn't love what I do. And I love what I do because of them. You know, they make the game fun. They make it interesting. As long as I don't walk past the mirror, I feel young.
Hockey players are notoriously tough. Who are the toughest guys you've ever had on your side?
Oh, well, definitely Bob Probert is one. And not just because of he was tough. I mean, when he needed anything done, I mean, he's like, if he needed sutures, no Novocaine, nothing, just sew me up, Doc. I mean, there was one story one time he tore his rotator cuff, and he wanted to make the road trip because he thought he can play. And I said to him, I said, Proby, I says, you can't play. I said, you have a torn rotator cuff, you can't do it. And all I wanted to do, just to get, all he had to do was to take a dumbbell and just lift it like that. Just all he had, to do. And he tried. I mean, the muscle was gone. I mean, there was no way he was going to do it. He tried. I said, you got 5 minutes to get that muscle going. If you're not, you're going back home for surgery. And he tried. I mean, it was obvious it was gone. The guy that played for us for Phoenix now, Nick Jalmerson, he was a tough guy too. I mean, this guy, even Brent Seabrook today also, it's like, I know them, they know me. If something happens to them, I do not go down to them until they look at me. They know. It's just like, okay, I know where you are, you know where I am. If I need you, I'll look for you.
Remember Dirk Graham scoring a goal with a broken kneecap?
Yeah, that was a...
Any other guys come to mind that you think about when you think about guys that were just incredibly tough?
I mean,
it's okay if you don't. Yeah, it doesn't matter. You know, it's okay.
They're all so tough in their own way. I mean, you get to the playoffs, and it's like, I mean, it's just phenomenal what these guys can play through. I mean, everybody wants to play. I mean, they don't want to sit out for everything. And it's always like, do I got a bruise? Well, why do you need a bruise for? Well, to show that I'm hurt. I said, no, it's fine. I get it. You're not. You don't need the discoloration or a bruise or anything like that to show you're hurt. I get it. Let's treat it.
How often do you have to keep players from hurting themselves? I mean, most guys want to always get back in. How many times are you pulling the reins on them?
We do a lot. Between, like, the doctor and myself and the players, I mean, if we know that they can't make the injury any worse, we'll let them do it we'll let them go back and play. But, if you know, then a lot of times we have to sit down and reason with them. Okay, no, this is why you can't play. This is for your benefit. You can't play because of this. Well, I feel okay. I know. I get it. But if you do go out, there's a chance you can make this worse, and then you turn one day into 3 weeks. So let's just take our time. But it's always a conversation that has to be had first by three of us usually.
Every time you run out onto the ice, it could be a life or death situation, and you got to be sharp every moment. What's the trickiest situation that you've run out into and you said to yourself, this could be serious?
I don't know if I actually had a situation like that, because it's kind of like, as long as I see the play, I kind of like, as I'm approaching the player, I kind of have a game plan in my head, like what I need to do and where I need to start. Because I've watched the play, I've seen what happened, so I kind of got a game plan in my head what the steps are and that I have to do. So that makes it a little bit easier. Unfortunately, the things that I don't see is where I can run. It's like if something happens on a near board or something where it's outside of my vision, then those are a little bit more difficult to do. We've had some, I had one guy go head first into the boards in Montreal one time, and that was devastating. He was just, he was knocked unconscious, and then we had to board him and bring him into the training room. It turned out fine. Everything was great, worked out really well. But those are the scary things when a guy goes, loses an edge, falls head first into the boards, things like that. Guys take elbows to the chin, those are the scary ones.
I seem to remember a game in the old stadium, a guy, I don't know who it was, a guy gets in a fight, gets punched in the throat, and as you're taking him off, he collapsed. His air duct, air pipe had shut down pretty much. I mean, do you remember anything like that? Or?
No, I don't remember that. The close one we had was Rene Bourque one time. He got lacerated jugular vein.
Wow.
Thank God it was a jugular vein, because it was bleeding. We had to stop the bleeding, but that could have turned into something that's really serious. Those are the ones those are serious situations that if that happens, then it's all hands on deck.
So you get paid by the Blackhawks, but a big part of your income and the equipment guy's income is tips that players will give you at Christmas time or at the end of the season. Most guys are great about it. And like any group of people, some guys are maybe a little bit more frugal. What's the worst gift you ever got? I hope you're going to tell me a fish story.
No, I heard that story though. It's somebody got some fish. I don't know that. I don't know if I have a story for that.
Okay. I heard you're a pretty good singer.
No.
Marina Del Rey, come on!
That was a bet that I got coerced into doing, which I never got paid for, so I never did it. I never did it again.
Well, listen, great milestone night tonight for the one we all call Gapper. We love him and have loved him for years, and product of Chicago's very own UIC and St. Rita High School. So here's to the next 2,500.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it.
Congrats, Gapper.
Thank you.
So that's a wrap on this edition of the Blackhawks Talk podcast. Our thanks to Pat Foley and congratulations to Mike Gapski for reaching a tremendous milestone, 2,500 regular season games as the Blackhawks head trainer. Also, thanks to Scott King, who made his maiden voyage on the podcast, and Adam Burrish as well. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time on the Blackhawks Talk podcast.